Strap into your midsize SUV and chase the kaiju storm with us this week as we look at the kickoff of a new millennium in the year 1999 with the first entry into a new era of Godzilla films. Will this overly ambitious and over-the-top take on the big G win at the box office or ignite fans' passions again? Or will it organically peter out? Find out along with us. This is Kaiju vs. History, Godzilla 2000.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your Showa-style meteorite alien aircraft, Miles, and joining me is a spiky-backed, rubber-suited foe, Patrick. Patrick, I'd ask how you were doing this week, but because of that terrible, terrible pun that you let off the episode with, I no longer care.
Organically.
I hate you for that.
Miles, we are done with the Heisei era of films, even though technically...
It doesn't end for like 20 years.
It's going to continue, yeah, for like another 20 years after this. But no, those movies are done. We are now in the millennium era of Godzilla films, and I'm excited to talk about them. I'm excited to get into them.
I am too. I mean, one, it's always a treat to talk about a Godzilla movie. I constantly say stuff like, there's no such thing as a bad Godzilla movie, because even the worst Godzilla movie, I still enjoy watching.
By our scale, where... like 5 to 7 is still a good movie, a good kaiju movie. There technically has not been a bad Godzilla movie.
I mean, I predict probably won't be.
Probably not.
But you know what's funny is, I mean, since we're going to be talking about the Millennium era for a little bit, this is an era that I think has been reevaluated a lot in the last 5 to 10 years, really the last 5 years, as the conversation has come up more and more. This is an era that was kind of felt oft neglected for the longest time and as a lesser era. And as time passes, it's been pretty kind. Like you have at least a duology that is very well respected. You have one movie that some people consider one of the best Godzilla movies. You have one that's like
a revisit,
kind of like a awesome celebration of everything Godzilla. It's an interesting
couple other movies.
Yeah, then you have a couple other movies, one of which we're talking to tonight.
I'm going to clear the air early on in this episode. I love this movie. I really enjoyed my time with it. Every time I watch this movie, I'm like, why don't people like this as much as I do?
Maybe I'll help answer that question tonight. But maybe I don't dislike this movie. I want to make that very clear. Because I wanted to talk about something, I guess, before we get there. And we are talking about 1999's Godzilla 2000, the movie that brought back the big G for at least 5 more years. But before we get to this film, tell us, Patrick, what is in a title?
Well, obviously, it is a movie that comes out in the year 1999. It is called Godzilla 2000 here, stateside.
This was a play that was made frequently in the late 90s. I mean, the Blues Brothers 2000. There's a lot of things that were like 2000 because we had this weird thing about the new millennium and Y2K and everything. It was just...
Even though, to be honest, I think Godzilla 1999 is a cooler title, you know, if they wanted to go with it. It's a cool title.
Actually, I the abbreviated title, I think, is pretty sick.
The abbreviated?
Yes. Oh,
G2K, yes.
I think that is a badass title. I love that title.
It's hilarious. The Japanese title is Gojira Nisen Marinomaru, Godzilla 2000 Millennium. And you'll also find this under that title in the States. But for the most part, it is just known as Godzilla 2000. It was just called The Return of Godzilla in Poland when it came out over there. And in Mexico, it had a very fun different name, Godzilla 2000 versus the extraterrestrial squid. I'm so happy we got an alternative title with a versus
hit. Yeah,
and not calling him Orga, just calling him
the extraterrestrial squid.
Yeah. El Calamar Extraterrestri.
And this is a fun distinction, but this movie, even though it's not a super crazy wide release, this is the last time we see Godzilla in American theaters for a very long time.
Yeah, until Legendary's Godzilla. So for the most part, theaters, I guess Toho in general, didn't push this to get into U.S. theaters the same way it did some of the Heisei films and trying to use the bond that they built with TriStar to get these Godzilla movies. And I think part of that is just a strategy. They kind of stopped making the films for the international audience and went back to focusing on the Japanese audience, which is, you know, your core base that I think you should be catering to first, you know?
Yeah.
Not to say this movie is like super Americanized, but I feel like there is a lot more, you know, Steven Spielberg in this one than Ishiro Honda, for example.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second. But I wanted to talk about that aspect because about the core fan base, because I think they also knew any core American fan bases were typically film fans, people who read movie magazines or frequented Suncoast. And this is the height of home video. This is the absolute height. So if anyone was going to find this film, they were going to find it. Because, look, this movie came out in theaters. It certainly didn't come out to mine.
I don't remember it, honestly. And I feel like that is, you know, in high school when I was keyed into films the most, you know, I would read the paper to see all the ads, which was kind of the best way to figure out
what was planned. Absolutely.
And
that or movie phone.
When did this come out? Stateside, was it the same
stateside release? I don't know.
August 17th of 2000.
So the following year.
I feel like I would have been living with my dad during the summer in that time frame, and we went to the movies like once a week. I think I've mentioned to you like one of my favorite theatrical experiences of all time was 98 or 99, whenever it came out, going to the limited release of the Blair Witch Project after reading a newspaper article about how it's a real found footage film. Like the first time this has ever happened. I, like it's a documentary.
I loved the marketing for that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. and it was like one of the best frightening experiences of all time for that. So if I had seen this in the theaters, I would have gone. I'm pretty sure. And if I had seen the trailer, did you watch the trailer while doing your research for this that they cut for American?
Yeah. Well, I didn't watch it for this, but it used to come on things I would rent.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, so I would rent other sci-fi movies, and it was on something where it was like, and had another TriStar movie or something, because I've rented a lot of trash, and and I remember seeing the trailer for Godzilla 2000, and this is. And this is something we'll talk about a little bit, because this is about the time that I was kind of not paying as much attention to kaiju movies.
You know, we had kind of a drought here in the U.S., you know, that was only somewhat by 1998's Godzilla.
I think I also only, well, it wasn't even that. It was like, I feel like I only found out about like the Godzilla movies happening because of Fangoria, because I was an avid Fangoria reader. And that's why I mentioned all of these films, when they got releases here, had an ad in one of your genre movie magazines.
Yeah.
But I was getting, I mean, I was always into it, but I was much more paying attention. You know, it's not like today where I kind of cast a wide net of all of my interests. So I was more focused in just horror. And I was also going to a lot of concerts at the time. It's not something we talk about a lot, but I'm a big, big music person. And that was like the kind of prime time of like when I first started going out to shows, and I've gone out to quite a few. So yeah, it's just I for a lot of the Millennium era, it wasn't really until Final Wars came out that I kind of went back.
I
mentioned that in a future episode.
you've mentioned before. I mean, you've mentioned that you enjoy Final Wars a great deal.
Oh yeah, that's from the beginning of time.
This is definitely the lost generation of Godzilla films for me as well, because I didn't have access to the DVDs. You know, I don't think I could have gotten them through Netflix around the time that they would have been.
Suncoast would carry them when they were still around, but they were also like $35 or something.
Yeah. But like I said, if I had seen this trailer, I would have gone to this movie. The trailer has Don LaFontaine, you know, like the in a world narrator.
Right.
It's got some great shots of the action of the movie. It has the song Super Beast by Rob Zombie, which is like,
that's really awesome.
Not really the feel of Godzilla, but it's a great trailer song. And yeah, the tagline of this film is "Let's get ready to crumble," which of course is a wrestling reference right up your alley.
But I will say this won't be the last time that they do this because Sum 41 is heavily featured in Godzilla Final Wars. Their music comes up a couple times.
That's interesting. I'm very excited to get to that movie as well. But yeah, this one did still have those connections to TriStar and U.S. distribution. So we do get at least kind of a take on how to sell this movie to audiences. And I don't know if it succeeded, but it definitely did not do that well here. Because like you said, this is the last movie to really have a wide theatrical release in the U.S. until Legendary Pictures' 2014 film. Let's get right into this movie.
Sorry, I've been watching this trailer. And
it's so good.
It's so good.
This movie is, like I said, one of my favorite Godzilla movies because it starts right. I mean, you know, top 20 probably easily.
Top 20.
Well, there's so many great movies. I don't know if this cracks the top 10, but I will say it is one of the best starts definitely to any Godzilla
100%. Movie. And you know what's so funny about this movie is it's the one that I always think I've seen the least. It's the one that I'm like, oh man, I haven't watched that movie in so long. And I literally start the movie and I'm like, oh yeah, this is like one of those memorable sequences.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've seen this scene a million times. And I forget that like, something used to play it, I think, in the late 2000s or something. It used to come on something, I guess. Or maybe I just had my DVD and played it a lot. But like, I don't know if like, you know, the Men in Black come into my room and use the memory device on me. But every single time, I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't seen this movie in 20 years. And I'm like, oh no, I've seen this movie 100 times. Because
That's the thing about it is it does feel like it is just innately watchable. You know, there's obviously some problems with the film that we're going to talk about, but it starts right in the middle of the action. There's no preamble. There's no narration or crawl. It starts with Godzilla attacking. You see Godzilla in the first 5 minutes of the movie in full, doing some amazing destruction. And yeah, I don't know. It seems like almost unlike every other Godzilla movie ever made in that way, you know. We also just are, there's so much that the film and our director for this film, Takao Okawara, I think assumes the audience knows about Godzilla, even though this is in a new continuity. This is a different Godzilla than I think any of the others that we've seen before. And I really appreciate that. I enjoy that a great deal, and that allows you to immediately get into the action of the film and the characters, who are some of my favorite characters of any Godzilla movie ever, Miles.
Honestly, the characters for me really carry this movie, especially when you start off with like the father and the daughter in the Jeep. This very much a tribute to Jurassic Park, but it's such a great sequence, and I love this idea. And it's one that kind of comes up in some form or fashion a lot in the Millennium Era. But the fact that like they don't really completely explain like what happened after 54, but like Godzilla's around and they treat him like a hurricane. Like they are trying to find different ways to predict Godzilla's movements. And yeah, like
you said, Jurassic Park, but it feels more like Twisters to me. You know, they're tracking Godzilla and predicting where he's going to make landfall. You're right. They are trying
to like discover a way to like actively predict like Godzilla's movements.
And you know, that's something that we get to see kind of influence some other Godzilla projects, including the Monsterverse. That's like kind of a big part of the Legendary series, is, you know, trying to predict these animals' movements. Definitely the Monarch series, it feels like that's a major part of that show. But yeah, this is really kind of like the first time we get this idea. And also, I think the best representation of non-scientist. I mean, I guess he is kind of a scientist, but non-military kind of based main characters in a film. They are, you know, just a family like getting by and also working to potentially stop Godzilla or at least lessen the effects of the monster's destruction. Yeah, like I said, you mentioned technically this movie is tied to the 1954 Godzilla movie, but that's not really mentioned in this.
No, it's just like not.
Godzilla exists in this universe. Go.
And so we have the father and daughter, and then we have this reporter who is also tagging along.
Yeah. And from
I always love when we just have a reporter in these movies. Like it makes me happy.
Naomi Nishida, and she's a very fun kind of addition to the dynamic. I love the daughter's relationship with her, the when she invites her onto the Godzilla Prediction Network and talks about how she's gonna have to pay dues and do housework and
that kid is so funny.
Yeah, so Naomi was played by Yuki Ichinose, and she's great. I think really it's the father and daughter characters that, like I said, make these some of my favorite, but she's definitely a part of the dynamic.
Yeah, she is.
And yeah, we get some good reporter kind of characters in the Millennium series. I think she's kind of overshadowed by some of the ones that will come later on. You know, there's definitely archetypes that are played with, but I feel like Takahiro Murata is our main character, the father, played by, oh no, he's playing Yuji Shinoda is the character's name. And we will, I think, see him in some smaller kind of cameos later on in this series, but we've already seen him as kind of background characters in a few of the Heisei films as well. But I don't know why he's just perfectly cast, I feel like, for this character in this movie. I really, really bought his kind of, you know, reluctant scientist, absent-minded kind of professor father figure. Just, it works very well for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I have problems with the movie. Is like the entire movie really should just be these characters for me. Like, I, because of the additional ensemble cast, which I know they needed for the bigger meta story, you have like the other, the, what is it, the scientist group, the CCI,
yeah, the SDF forces, and
yeah,
the another scientist who is kind of like the corporate scientist who like went into the military,
Katagiri. Yeah,
and he's a great over the top kind of, I guess, technically villain, but he's really just
he's an antagonist. He's not a villain.
He's an
asshole, but he's not a villain.
They have a, you know, he's the reason why Shinoda kind of like left the project that they were working on and went independent and things like that. And so his main thing is like they are actively trying to destroy Godzilla. Right. Which,
and Shinoda wants to study Godzilla because he thinks there could be secrets to unlock that could help mankind.
And that's where we get kind of a refrain from the Millennium series and one of my favorite kaiju movies of all time, Godzilla versus Biollante, and the G cells from that movie. They want to study Godzilla's DNA and look at like what makes his skin so tough or be able to regenerate and things like that. And that is definitely a plot point that comes up a lot.
My favorite
Millennium and all the series.
I can't remember if his category says this or one of his little buddies, but someone goes, am I one of those reckless scientists, as if like standoffishly, and the reaction is like, yeah, kind of.
This movie features some real life places, including the nuclear facility at Tokai, which I think Godzilla attacks in the daylight in this movie. There was an incident in 1997 at the Takamura plant, and another one a few years later, right before this movie's release in 1999, there were a couple of people killed in a liquid uranium accident and hundreds more dosed with radiation, which, you know, is so you would think they would just make up like a fictional location. Like they've done it so many times before, but I think this is where they kind of learn their lesson in that respect, not to add in, you know, obviously Japan has a history with nuclear power, and it's not one that you want to take lightly. One thing I love about this movie, there's a issue of G-Fan that has a quote from producer Shogo Tomiyama, and who said that the target audience for this movie when it was being made was for people in their 30s, which puts it in the range of catering to folks who were kids in the 60s, you know, late 60s, early 70s, you know, really focusing in on that nostalgia that that generation in Japan would have for Godzilla. And while I feel like this movie definitely has a lot of ties to the Showa era, honestly, it just feels like a Heisei movie to me.
Yeah, I mean,
some upgrades.
It feels like it would be somewhere between The Return of Godzilla and versus Biollante.
Yeah, like, to be honest, with a lot of great Showa era kind of, like, I would say somewhat humorous, but more realistic kind of characters. And there are some attempts at like slapstick comedy in this movie that feel like they were directly out of the Showa era. There's like this when the reporter is asking for direction to these two construction workers, and they do like a Laurel and Hardy routine where he's like moving the ladder around and hitting the guy in the head. It doesn't make sense in this movie. It doesn't really need to be there, but it really does feel like a Showa era in those moments. Because yeah, we get some over the top kind of Showa era fights towards the end of this movie. Really makes me think of versus Gigan or versus Hedera when Orga's in like his kind of giant half Godzilla form at the end. But yeah, I can see how this is them trying to cater more to the Japanese audience that maybe didn't like the 1998 TriStar Godzilla. We're like, what was that? You know, after watching that movie. And yeah, this movie is a response to that. This is why you gave that movie a 10 for its importance, so they would come back do something.
Absolutely. This is exactly why I did it.
We wouldn't have gotten this until probably like 2004 if they had kept making the TriStar trilogy that they had planned. But yeah, I'm very happy that the movie bombed, relatively speaking. So when asked about it, a spokesperson for Toho told Variety that Sony asked us not to make our own version of Godzilla. And when they were making this movie, they were still like up in the air if they were going to do a sequel to 1998's Godzilla, but there was no contractual relationship stopping them from making their own Godzilla movie, which is very smart. It's probably exactly the same contract that they had for the Legendary Pictures. Like, they could still make their own Godzilla films, and they did. They made, obviously, Shin Godzilla. They made Godzilla Minus One. But yeah, he went on to talk about, like, if TriStar Godzilla was a big hit, they wouldn't really have taken away from that. And if it wasn't, you know, they had their own Godzilla movie in their back pocket, you know? So they were kind of having their cake and eating it too, in a way, and putting this movie out as fast as they could. And obviously they chose right, because they would basically make a Godzilla movie every year for the next 5 years after this, and to varying degrees of success. The Millennium Era is the closest knit of all the Godzilla eras. You know,
yeah,
there's like no downtime in the making of these films.
And it is varying degrees of success, because you have quality that's all over the place, and fans are fairly divided. It's not like the Heisei era, where even though some of the movies may not be as great as we remember them, like, it's general consensus that the Heisei era is pretty flawless. And I mean, it's tough to disagree with that, even though if you look at our ratings, maybe we have a little bit. But this is different, because like a lot of my problems with this movie stem really from the villain side of things. The villain just feels tacked in. And I mean, I know there's important scenes and it's a presence, but it doesn't seem like a concern until it's physically there.
I mean, it's there as like a huge, basically an ovum, like a giant egg, the majority of the movie, that I'm still confused as to what it is. Is it like a soup of consciousnesses, or is it like one entity? Like, they describe it as being an alien craft, but a living craft. I kind of
felt like it was, what did they call it? What did those people call it in Deep Space Nine? The changeling, the great something.
They make me think of like ant colonies in a way. Like what the LDL is in Neon Genesis Evangelion. It's just a big old soup of consciousness that takes the form of a giant craft and is seeking out different genetic material, including Godzilla's. You just don't really get that information up front. And the monster, the antagonist, changes so much over the course of the movie.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think I realized until doing this episode that the monster has two different names.
What do you mean?
It's technically not two different names, but there's like the one called Millennia. Or Millennium?
Oh, yeah, there's like the CGI version that's kind of jellyfish.
Only really known as Orga, and like as different versions of Orga. So that was a first for me. But I think part of that problem for me is the film's not called Godzilla versus Orga. So I mean, credit where credit's due. But I think because we kind of stretch ourselves too much with like, okay, we're going to focus on the scientists and this thing. We're going to do a little corporate espionage because that's an old classic chestnut we can crack open.
We got the X-Files in here.
Yeah, and then you get your like, Amblin stuff.
Why is the alien like accessing all these databases and stuff? Like, there's some interesting mysteries afoot.
It's not that any of the ideas are bad. I just don't think it's not always a situation of like these great taste great together. And so for me, the sum of the parts feels a little disjointed because I know I said at the top of the show, they're like, oh, I don't love this movie. And it's true. I don't love this movie. I like this movie a lot. But for me, my biggest problem is like putting all those pieces together. Like by themselves, they're all good pieces. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like they don't really gel. Kind of a minor complaint I had with, was it Gamera 3, where I said something similar, where like you have these all individually cool things. Like Orga is an interesting thing. And honestly, would have been a really cool thing to have really present the entire movie, because there's a lot of things you could you could discuss the nature of human society now, where we're digital and we are becoming more and more a slave to that. I mean, heck, all the anime from the late 90s was Serial Experiments Lane, you know, was talking about that. Ghost in the Shell was talking about that. That's something they could have tapped into. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of cool ideas. I love, like I said, the Amblin stuff. I love the father-daughter stuff. It's my favorite stuff from the movie. I think they're the best characters.
Yeah. And it's so funny that I don't think they were really trying to knock off a Spielberg movie, unlike a lot of the Heisei movies were actively trying to capture some of that magic, but they do it regardless in this.
No, they actively capture that magic in this one. It doesn't feel like a copy. Like the
Return of Mothra movie obviously tried to do that as well.
Right. Like this one feels like, even though I said Jurassic Park, it feels more referential and lovingly so. Jurassic Park
in it too, yeah.
but it also, it doesn't feel like that in a way where the beginning of the Heisei era was like, here's a Terminator, here's Indiana Jones. And you know, it really felt like, okay, you have a giant dinosaur. Let's do something kind of cool with a giant dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And that opening sequence with a Jeep that looks very similar to the Jurassic Park Jeeps. it's all that stuff is great. I wish all the tissue connected the way I wanted it to for this one.
You know, maybe part of the problem is this, I mean, was a very fast turnaround. 2 months after TriStar's Godzilla came out in theaters is when our new producer for Toho in Shogo Tomiyama, he hired two different writers. He hired Hiroshi Kashiwabara and Wataru Mimura, and, you know, also a director, I think, after that. But took his job as producer, took these two screenwriters and took three different viewpoints to make one film. And I think they kind of divided the script writing up into two parts. And I don't know if part of that was like what they would go on to do the technical side of the film, and the other part was like the family side. But it definitely does feel like a couple movies kind of smashed together at parts. And I feel part of that is a Showa era film. Part of that is a Heisei film.
Mm-hmm.
And
part of that's something new.
Yeah. And I feel like the parts of this that don't work are the ones that are closest hewn to a Showa era movie. I like you said, I feel like this would have fit in pretty well between Return of Godzilla and versus Biollante.
It really has that feel. And part of it is like that the way it's shot, the way the city's shot. And also, like, how Godzilla is. Godzilla is not as much as an outright villain. Godzilla is more like that jackass older brother, because it's like, you know, he might stomp on Tokyo, but as soon as someone else is threatening Tokyo in the world, it's like,
Oh, we should talk about Godzilla here, because, of course, we have a new design for the Millennium Era, the Mira Goji suit, which is a little divisive.
Yes, it is.
some people don't like the huge, wide Joker-esque smile. Some people don't like the back spikes. They definitely enhanced, I would say. And they changed the colorization of the back spikes. I love this suit. I think it's really great. I think, you know, you can make bold decisions, but so long as it's kind of, you know, interesting decisions, I feel like it will look good on screen. And this movie, it definitely does. I feel like it paid off taking a risk. And
go ahead.
I'm not a huge fan of doing super crazy things with the dorsal plates. Like I said, I don't know. I just find this one very striking and interesting. It's definitely a new outline for Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
It is very influential, because we get crazier back spikes in Godzilla Minus One. We get a very similar head suit design for Shin Godzilla with like the super wide, crazy Joker smile. And yeah, this sets it pretty well apart. I mean, you just look at this and you say, oh, well, that's not Heisei Godzilla. This is obviously Millennium that we're looking at. So
yeah,
I think it does what they were trying to do.
I definitely fall in the camp that, well, I'm in between. Like the main thing I don't love is the super wide mouth. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the green. I don't mind the dorsal spikes. I know they use this for this suit and this movie and the next one.
They made new suits for versus Megaguirus, but it is from the same mold. But they did make it a sight more green in that movie.
Yeah, and I don't mind the green. I find the design just fine. I don't love it, but it's something that like sometimes I'll be like, yeah, I just don't like this design. Sometimes I'm coming around like really around on the design. I certainly like when other movies have kind of toyed with it a little bit. But again, I don't actively dislike it. It's I think my biggest problem is with the Heisei era. They made an effort to have like some hydraulic animatronics made for like a face, so you had the eyes moving and it felt a little more expressive. And we don't get that as much here with this suit.
Yes, there are animatronic heads for this Godzilla suit, but the movement is a great deal pared down, I feel like, and we don't have the blown up bust for just close-ups. I don't think they created one for Mira Goji that was just for those reaction shots and things like that. So, part of that is budget, part of that is time, probably.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they don't really work to improve it too much for the next movie, but they just reuse the suit, even though these movies aren't tied together as far as Godzilla is concerned. It's its own continuity, which I think is another, you know, just chalk that up to
the Millennium Era is wild.
Yeah, they go all over the place with their Godzillas. The same designer, Shinichi Wakasa, who made the Destoroyah models, would be the primarily modeler for this movie and the rest of the Millennium series films. Some great concept art for Orga. I feel like Orga kind of got away from them in its final design elements, you know, being part mm-hmm. CGI, part alien craft. It really does harken back to a Hedera, where it had a flying mode and like a pseudomated mode, but those, they don't feel very tied together. And I also don't see a lot of Godzilla in the final form of Orga, as opposed to, say, I don't know, I'll pull an example out of the top of my head here versus Biollante, which looks in its final form very Godzilla like in a similar fashion.
Yeah, because I mean, there are obviously some very like obvious visual reference to Hedorah, but at the same time, it like doesn't have that energy. Like, and that's the thing that at the end of the day is like, Oreo just doesn't really feel like a character.
Well, like we mentioned earlier, you don't really get to see fully finalized Orga until the last half of the last act, which is a long act in the movie. Like the action at the end is pretty good, but still it doesn't seem like that big of a threat because it's not around a lot of the movie.
It's not around. And like, I understand the threat that they're trying to deliver to us. And I mean, I think Orga is potentially a really cool idea if they maybe kind of, I think some of the concepts they were working with were kind of neat. And it's hard not to like think that Orga has had the design of Orga hasn't had some sort of influence on kaiju films in general, because like you look at the Cloverfield monster, you look at the Mutos from Godzilla 2014, and while not one for one, there are clear influences of going for this certain type of creature. And so I think they were on the right track. I just don't think the story took us there. And then by the time we get the monster, I mean, it's kind of whatever.
Yeah. And like I said, I think some of the original designs you can go look at on Toho Kingdom for Orga are a lot more alien and weird. And the transitions between the millennial kind of squid monster and the Godzilla version, I think, are a lot more clear in the design phase, but not the build phase. It just didn't work out that way.
It also makes the fight kind of muddy, because you're like, okay, what's this thing's? I mean, it also takes place at night, which is a big criticism for a lot of Godzilla films. But like this one, actively, I'm like, what's really going on? And then at the very end, I'm like, oh, I guess it did kind of envelop Godzilla in his mouth, and then Godzilla just kind of blows up his tum tum, and I'm just like, this is. I see how this idea would have been super dynamic on paper, and it's okay in execution. Mm-hmm. Godzilla taking out Orga.
Did you watch the English version of this movie or the Japanese?
The Japanese.
Okay, so that's the one that I definitely love. I watched the English version this time around. I think I watched both, actually, because like I said, we've been prepping for this episode for a while now, and it's one of my favorites. The American version is so crazy. The voice actors are great, but
yeah,
they changed some of they kind of localized some of the dubbing. There are a couple of lines that are homages to Dr. Strangelove, and in another one from Patton, they interject the line, you know, talking about fighting Godzilla. A character says, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, you know, talking about like, you know, striking Godzilla or whatever. And then the first time the reporter, Naomi's news editor, sees the alien craft outside of the offices, I forget what he says in the Japanese and in the original, but in the American version, they change it to Superman's editor Perry White's catchphrase, "Great Caesar's a ghost."
Okay, that's pretty great.
Makes me laugh every time it's seen a Japanese man
saying "Great Caesar." I love that. I don't think I probably watched the dub the first time I ever saw this movie, because it was likely on a VHS. Well, no, maybe I did rent this when it came out, because now I have a very clear memory of getting that. So Hollywood Video used to, unlike Blockbuster, where Blockbuster, they would put the movies in a clamshell. Hollywood Video would put the VHS cases in this weird plastic sleeve. And you would press the two sides to let the video slide out. So you would take the actual case home with you. I think it's something they did after a certain point. And I have an absolute memory of doing that with Godzilla 2000. So I must have rented it. Like, that just hit me. So I must have seen that and been okay and then just never gone back until Final Wars. Because the dub is, I mean, now I can appreciate it. When I was This came out in 2000, so I was 16 years old. I probably was not as impressed with the dub at that point in time.
Yeah, I don't see a VHS release at least listed online. Or sure, it wasn't a DVD.
It honestly, it could have been. I just feel like I remember. Yeah, there's a picture of a VHS right there.
Did I put it in the notes? No.
No, but I'm looking at eBay.
Oh, that's interesting. This movie, I feel, is kind of a celebration of Godzilla movies that came before it. It assumes that you have a knowledge of Godzilla going into it, which is why it's probably not great for someone's first Godzilla movie. But I think if you're a hardcore Godzilla fan, you're going to just sit down and start eating this movie up. There's a lot of, you know, 1990s pop culture elements from, you know, your Jurassic Park feels to, I mean, the first scene of Godzilla destroying the tunnel and then kind of like running away. Mm-hmm. It's both the running away from T-Rex and Godzilla, but also there's a similar scene of them getting stuck in a tunnel in TriStar Godzilla. So like they're referencing
it happens a lot. Tunnels are a special place for this little guy.
Do you have a favorite scene in the movie? I know there's a lot of fun stuff in here, but
only because it's so ridiculous. And that's, and when, oh gosh, Shinoda is trying to escape from the skyscraper.
Yeah. That reminded me a lot of Return of Godzilla. They kind of have a similar sequence.
Right. There. But like judging by like how buildings and explosions work and how this guy is slowly moving down, I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And it's honestly
a little Independence Day with the aliens. Right. I guess it's the humans that are destroying the building.
But yeah, the humans are destroying
very similar
one.
Destruction top down.
It's very, very funny. Also, Godzilla, I know I mentioned that Godzilla does not have as many facial expressions, but they do a little head tilt when Orga's final form shows up. Like that looks very like WTF. Like
Godzilla, like, I feel like has a great character in this movie. You know, he does seem like a grumpy Gus, but is very fun kaiju still.
Yeah, I mean, nothing beats 70s. Godzilla who's coming above the rock to stare at Megalon and Gigan with that big old angry face. Like that is the best scene in kaiju history, bar none.
Yeah, but yeah, he's a grumpy looking kaiju suit here.
But yeah, those are probably like my favorite, just because that, and honestly, like real talk, that first escape scene that Shinoda and his daughter do, like that whole sequence is fantastic. And it, like, yes, is it a little bit of a Jurassic Park homage for sure, but there is a wonderful sense of adventure in that sequence that I really love. And honestly, it's that scene that kind of sticks out the most to me in this movie, and one of the reasons why I do go back to this one is because of those characters.
I'm trying to think of like a better Godzilla action sequence where like the main characters are kind of in peril like that, and I think that's one of the reasons it sticks out so much, is it really, there's not too much similar to this. You know, how often do you see a vehicle racing away from Godzilla? You know, just
you just need Jeff Goldblum going, let's go faster, let's go faster, yeah, let's go faster.
Exactly. I mean, that's what the reporter Naomi is doing in that character, in that scene when she uses the flash on Godzilla. Oh man, it's so good.
Oh yeah, because you're like, what are you doing? And even Shino's like, looks at her like, what are you doing?
Is it worth it to get the shot? So Shinoda, Io is the daughter's name, and Yuki, their dynamic is great. It reminds me of writing from an Ultra Q episode and character dynamics from that
very
show.
Much so, yes.
And like I said, it feels unlike a lot of other Godzilla movies. There's an audio commentary for the film's English version, and producer Mike Schlesinger says one of the criticisms they heard back from this movie is there wasn't enough Godzilla in the film, but this movie has some of the highest percentage of screen time for Godzilla. You know, like I said, he's in the first 5 minutes of the film of any Godzilla movie. I think it is really only surpassed by the Heisei era's versus Mechagodzilla 2 as far as Godzilla screen time goes, which is interesting. But I believe it because that third act has so much Godzilla in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, he's in here from the very beginning. Yeah, they had a TriStar was initially pretty pleased with this film and were looking to do an American-led sequel to this movie called Godzilla Reborn, potentially directed by Joe Dante, which, I mean, why can't this movie be real? But I would have loved to see these characters come back, this world come back.
Oh, absolutely. And it would be even better if they just threw in Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates.
Yeah. Just
Joe Dante directed both Gremlins movies.
I was about to say, like, have the back them carrying a backpack that's like starts squeaking and they're like, quiet down, you.
No, like they moved to Japan to like get away from like, okay, we're not gonna get around any Mogwai now.
So this movie was going to take place in the US. It was going to potentially be set in Hawaii. So a little halfway.
Oh, I did hear about that. Yeah.
Between Japan and the US. And, you know, we would eventually get to see Godzilla in Hawaii in Legendary's 2014 Godzilla film. But this would have had a new foe for Godzilla, a flying lava monster that kind of looks like a bat, which, you know, they failed to get funding, but I would have loved to see that movie. I think that would have been a lot of fun. And honestly, there's a couple of films in this Millennium series I wish they had taken to give a sequel or a trilogy of, but yeah, this universe is definitely one of them. So that should take us to our ratings here. This is not a perfect movie for me. This isn't my favorite, you know, top five Godzilla films, but it's high up there. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. I just really plain enjoy every time I go to watch this movie, and now I can confirm both the American and the Japanese version. It is a lot of fun. There's a novel Godzilla enemy. There's an interesting play on catering to the little kid in 30-something-year-olds from the Showa era, and also taking a lot of the sensibilities of the Heisei, you know, design elements and things like that. I mean, this is definitely top five favorite human casts for me from a Godzilla film. And yeah, it did what I think is kind of impossible, which is give a fresh start to Godzilla for a 45-year-old series, you know, for a character that's been around forever. And it really just rollicks along. It is a fairly long Godzilla movie, right? Am I making that
yes
up? It is an hour and 47 minutes, so I think that's slightly longer than your average Godzilla movie. The U.S. cut 8 minutes from that, but yeah, not my favorite, but definitely top. I'm going to say definitely top 15, maybe cracking the top 10. We'll see what the score is at the end, but 9 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. What about you, Miles?
So, like I said, I like this movie. I think it is pretty good. A lot of my criticisms coming into this episode still stand, despite the fact that there's a lot to like about this movie. Its length, because the script is kind of all over the place, this movie drags in a lot of places for me. And it just sometimes struggles to keep my attention. That said, yes, some of the best human characters. There are some really fun Godzilla sequences. So I am lower, but I always, before I like actually get my score, I'm like, okay, what is this on our actual scale? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 for my personal enjoyment, which is 3.5 stars. Very good, interesting concept and execution and evocative. I think all those apply to this movie. I think the concept is fantastic. I just don't think they nail it. Yes. And I think it does have some great characters. I just wish they were threaded better, because I agree. I think this has some of the best human characters in kaiju cinema. I do. And another pass of the script might have solved this, because I think we just have too many separate pieces that aren't always working in tandem. And as a result, the movie does tend to drag for me, which does affect my enjoyment. How did you find the technical aspect?
So we didn't really talk about it, but there is a lot of composite blue screening. There's some CGI in the film, but there's a lot of blue screening that I feel like they were kind of pushing the envelope of what they should have been doing in this movie, because some of it looks great. And for kind of a practical effect of having like a pseudimation on top of a blue screen, like there's a sequence when they're driving along the coastline and Godzilla is in the ocean at night and it looks great. There's other times during the daytime when they use a similar technology, it does not look great. It looks very bad. So it's interesting. I think it is, you know, because they're trying to do like this whole new generation of Godzilla movies, they're trying to push what they are technically capable of doing. So that being said, that's really one of my only major gripes with the technical aspect. Like I said, character-wise, acting, directing, I think this movie outperforms a lot of even the Heisei series for that aspect of it. I like the Godzilla. I enjoy Orga for the most part. So I'm pretty impressed with what this was able to accomplish, especially given how this movie was made in like less than a year.
Right. Really.
From like just concept to putting on the screen was like, think 10 months, something insane like that. So I'm giving it an 8 out of 10, which is great, you know, for us. I think this is definitely surpassed by some of the more methodically, technically proficient Heisei era films, but is a great way to kick off the Millennium series. What about you, Mon?
I mean, well, obviously the script is an issue for me. I actually forgot to mention that I kind of hate the last scene in the movie. I think Kitagawa's death is moronic. And
it's very silly.
I actively hate it. I love Godzilla
being like, what do you say to me, boy?
Yeah. Smash. And then Godzilla just turns around and is like, yeah, I want to burn stuff. Woo-hoo.
And I actually love that. I mean, obviously, is something that they will also reference in Shin Godzilla is this wild, like, fire-breathing action.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it hadn't just come after that last part, I would have been fine with it. So yeah, I forgot about that aspect. So yeah, again, that script hurts for me. While I don't love the design, it's still well done. Godzilla still has a bit of a personality, different character than we have been in the last several films, but it's still a character. Orga, I still think needs some more time cooking, both as a character and as a monster. But some neat ideas at play. I'm with you. I think this is well directed, even though there are some choices that they made for the daytime sequences that should have been rethought because it makes the movie look cheaper. And they could have shot it in ways that didn't do that.
We did really mention Kenji Suzuki is the main special effects director for this film and was first assistant, you know, director for, I think, all of the Heisei movies after Biollante and a couple of the Rebirth of Mothra films. And this is after Rebirth of Mothra 3, his, you know, first Godzilla movie by himself. And like I said, I think he bit off a good chunk of difficult assignments for
right.
He didn't have to, and he just went crazy.
And that's very apparent. So I do have to slash it for those things, although I still think it's very good. So I'm sticking with a 7.
Okay. Oh, what about where you rank this on its importance now? Keeping in mind that you gave TriStar's 1998 Godzilla a 10 out of 10.
Correct.
This is the movie that comes as a result of that one.
Yes.
Not igniting the passions of the Godzilla fandom.
So that's the problem, I think, is while this does, and this is where I struggle, while this one does kickstart the Millennium Era and delivers a really interesting array of films. Yeah, it didn't have a massive impact or as big an impact as they had hoped, but obviously enough to garner another film. It's certainly evocative of this kind of almost like a lost early Heisei film. So I don't think it has any issues as being like a kaiju film, but for its importance in the annals of kaiju cinema, it's tough for me. I definitely think it's an important movie because it does start the new era. I think its importance is waned by its lack of success. And I think that while it does kickstart other things that have been treasured, this movie itself is still part of the forgotten era. Even when we talk about the Millennium series, we mostly talk about one of maybe of the other films. I mean, there's what, 5? And there's like 3 that we talk about. 4? Wait, there's 6?
There's 6.
There's 6. Yeah. So there's like 4 we really talk about, and then 2 others don't get mentioned as much. And this unfortunately is one of them. So I'm stuck, but I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I was also worried you're going to go lower.
No. This is definitely still an important movie, and in that way it is great. But I think this particular movie, while it does set off things. It does start things. I think the shockwave of 98 is still being felt. Yeah. And it kind of unfortunately had a negative impact on this one.
I'm going as high as a 9 out of 10. I really do. While I don't think this connected with audiences as much as Toho wanted this to, this was the ointment, the salve that I think Japanese folks needed after TriStar's Godzilla.
Right.
This is a movie that is favorably kind of reviewed. I mean, not like a great deal more than TriStar's film, but I think he's really a victim of, you know, biases of, you know, obviously, like you said, some of the Millennium films that come after this really overshadow it. But the same thing I think was true of Godzilla versus Biollante, and fans eventually found their way back to that movie and started appreciating it. I really hope folks do the same for this film. It
certainly does not deserve to be forgotten, and it's certainly a very fun movie.
I think this is a great, I feel like this would have been a very good anniversary film, because like I said, it really does feel like it takes a lot of elements from Godzilla's past and just kind of rolls them up into a, you know, a more box office-y production.
Don't worry. They got an anniversary film coming.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they took some of the lessons and really ran with it. But yeah, this is kind of a quintessential Godzilla experience. And I think part of the appeal for me is that this is not tied really heavily to any other continuity. And if you kind of like know the general gist of Godzilla, you can kind of dive into this movie. But mm-hmm. if you have watched all the other Godzilla movies like we have up till this point, it's even more enriching in a lot of ways. So not as influential, not as well remembered as some of the other Millennium films that are to come. But thankfully, there's at least one worse than this. So this is not the worst of the Millennium series. So yeah, 9 out of 10 brings my final score to an 8.6, yours to a 7.3. So I'm at a 9, you're at a 7. The podcast final is an 8 out of 10.
All right.
Which perfectly fine. I was worried if you went a little lower, it might drop down to a 7, which I think it's just slightly too low. Definitely a lot of this is colored by the fact that I personally find this movie very rewatchable. Maybe even more so than some of the later Millennium films, you know.
And, I don't know. We got some good stuff on the way.
The next couple months are going to be very, very fun, to say the least. So yeah, that's gonna do it for this week's episode, and that's gonna do it, because this is the final film in the 1990s, our season 5 of the podcast, Miles. We are done. Basically.
Woo.
29 films in the bag, some absolute bangers, and also some of the worst films we have ever seen in this collection.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But yeah, if you've enjoyed going through the 1990s and kaiju films with us, let us know at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com or on your social medias at kaijuversushistory. The Cosmic Crit Discord, we've got a channel dedicated to kaiju news and this podcast. If you want to talk about the movies with us anywhere online, you can do it there. If you want to see our past reviews, we have them all on, well, wherever you can find podcasts, but also on Letterboxd. You can find us at Kaiju vs. History on Letterboxd and see our past reviews in 5-star formats. Miles, what is coming up last, but not least, in this season? What's happening next week?
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next time when we say goodbye to the 1990s in Kaiju cinema and finish up season 5 in general. So join us next week as we recap and review the entirety of the decade in History versus the 1990s, Decade in Kaiju Review.